All right, you beautiful lot. Thank you again for tuning in to the EAEM podcast. You honestly have no idea how amazing that is. I was having a look at when I started this, and it was like the 25th of May. So it's quite amazing that it's still going strong. We're getting new listeners every day as well, so I mean, it's great. Episode 37. I even messaged some guy on TikTok. He said that he started a new, like he started a podcast, and he was interviewing people from like all over the world. So I gave him a message and was like, "You can interview me. Like I've started my own podcast. I'd be happy to talk to you." And then I would get him back on my podcast. I'm thinking that I'm gonna start getting some people on the podcast as well, because I think that's the way that I want it to go. I mean, I know that I talk a whole dose of crap, so it might be interesting having someone else's view apart from mine. Maybe someone else's different opinion. Like, we could have a debate. But yeah, I'm thinking that that's the way that I'm wanting it to go. Instead of just me talking all the time, I'd done it more for the confidence type thing of seeing where it would go, seeing what would happen if I just started talking into a microphone. And yeah, it's been pretty good. I can't complain to you so far. It's been pretty funny. We've had some ups and downs. I've had to admit I was wrong on yesterday's episode because I didn't get my information right. All right, my information was all right, but it was from years ago in 1979. So yeah, so as someone said to me, like, this is the reason why it's good to do your research before. So yeah, so I've been doing research. I've been having a look and doing research. I also heard a couple of good things on TikTok that I'm gonna speak about. First steps to change your life, but there was only two steps because it was only a minute long. But I wrote down those two steps, so you'll get told them as well. It did resonate with me, so hopefully it'll resonate with you. And we can, yeah, hopefully you can just take it away and start using it, and yeah, we'll see how it goes. I've also got I heard a guy on TikTok, and he was a comedian, and he was talking about something, so I've went and had a look up on that, and that's really funny. So I will tell you guys that. I've got my coffee here today, so I'm gonna move away the microphone so that I can take a drink. Sorry, I didn't mean to smash my glass down on the table there. But yeah, I've just got back from swimming. If you stay in and around the northeast of Scotland, near Aberdeen, the sports village aquatic centre, they seem to be doing free swimming for the fast lane. So if you're a fast swimmer, then you can get in there for free. I've done it the past couple of days because I can't go out running, but saying that, my ankle is now starting to get better, which I am over the moon about, because that means that I'll be able to get running soon, and I honestly cannot wait. Even though I know that the first run's gonna be tough, it's gonna be a tough, tough run, a mentally challenging run where my mind isn't gonna be on my side. But I think if I maybe slow down my pace, but I keep on doing this, I keep on thinking to myself, I'm gonna have a nice slow run today, and then my first K, it's slow. And then I just keep on getting faster and faster. And then before I know it, I'm sweating buckets and dying. But yeah, So hopefully I can challenge myself to start going slower. Once you start slowing down your pace, then that's when you can start running and running and running. I think what's David Goggins said, there's like a heart rate that you can get in between. I think it's like 125 beat per minute and 140 possibly. And he said that if you can get your heart rate into that kind of rate, then you can just run forever, basically. Like you don't lose, you're not out of breath, you're not kind of like your mind. I mean, your mind's always playing against you because it enjoys comfort. But you need to kick that mind in the face. You tell him who's boss. Because yeah, it is amazing once you start telling that mind who's boss. And I think that's why I enjoy the cold showers as well, because the fear is something else. But once you start doing it, and once you just go in and do it, I mean, it's cold when you get in, but then yeah, once you're in, then that's it, you're in, just get it done. And it's totally showing that you are the type of person who goes through on the things that you say that you're gonna do. And that's basically what it says on I think that's step two, that you have to commit, basically, and you can't keep on lying to yourself. Because every time that you're saying to yourself that I'm going to do this, and then you don't go and do this, then your mind just thinks that you're a liar. It's like I am the type of person who says that I'm going to do something and then I don't complete it. So there's no point in trying new things because I just lie to myself. I just don't complete it. Or I don't even try and do it. I think I was watching something else as well, and they were saying that kind of like you don't need to be one of these people. A lot of people think that they need to get up really early and they need to go out and do the run and then do this and do that and all that. And you might not be one of these people who can get up early. So just get up when you want and then go and do those things instead of beating yourself up. I think we beat ourselves up quite a lot if things haven't been going our way, or if we've failed, or anything like that. And you know, like people beat you up, you know, like everybody's against you, basically. So why would you be against yourself? Everyone is looking for that excuse for you to fail. For you to fall flat on your face, because that's the type of society that we live in now, where people don't really care about you. There is a selected few who might care about you, but the rest of the world doesn't care. I think exactly as we said yesterday, you know, like the people aren't interested in your dreams; they are more interested in their dreams. So stop caring what they think about you and have the balls to stand up and just be like, well, no, I don't want to live a life like this. I want to make a change. And we live in the present moment, so make that change now. Start doing that thing now. And as I've said before, that it becomes into a habit. And then once it becomes into a habit, then you've got it basically. You know, like you just go and do it when times get hard, and that's exactly what I do. I mean, I was proud of myself. I think I'd done like 42 lengths at like 1,050 meters yesterday when I was swimming. And I was talking to the person that I'm seeing, and I was saying to her that kind of like I want to beat the 42 lengths, and yeah, like there's no competition between anybody. The only person who you should be competing against is yourself, the person that you were yesterday. So I went into that swimming pool with that kind of mindset that I was going to beat those 42 lengths. I was going to beat that 1,050 meters that I done yesterday. And booyah, I totally done it. Let's go into my phone since I've got my Apple Watch. So yesterday I done 42 lengths and the distance was 1,050 meters. I done 43 minutes and 55 seconds. My active kilocalories were 545 and my average heart rate was 140 beats per minute. But today I done 46.28. Oh, well, that makes me feel a bit bad now. But I mean, I smashed it out of the park anyway. But my pace was slower. Let's have a look at my pace yesterday. Like, it's saying that my average pace yesterday was 4 minutes 26 to 85 strokes. Like, I don't really understand that. Or a minute and. Is it 1 minute and two? Yeah, I don't understand that. I do not understand that. But yeah, today. So I done 46 minutes and 28 seconds. My distance was 1,325 meters. My active kilocalories was 602. And my average heart rate was 147 beats per minute. And I done 53 lengths on the 25 meter pool length. But they've got the 50 meter pool length in there. And like, I thought that, well, I am quite a good swimmer. I'm not too bad, you know, like I haven't been swimming in ages, but I'm a reasonable swimmer. I can swim fast, like I can swim and everything like that. But the first time that I done that 50 meter pool, oh my God. Like got to like halfway on the pool and then you're like looking up and you're like, I must be close, I must be close. And then you're looking up and you're like, oh my God, I'm only in the middle of the pool. Your whole arms are dead and dying. That's totally what I've noticed. Like I've been trying to do like front crawl when I've been going in there and then kind of like you just get tired. Kind of like I was knackered after about 5 minutes of swimming. And of course because it's all lane swimming, then you've got like, well, I mean, I was lucky yesterday there was nobody in my lane, so I just had the whole lane to myself. So I mean, I could, like, once I was dying, I could slow down and do breaststroke and all that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, by my pace today, it was even slower today. But yeah, kind of like, but then today there was like I had my own lane again until some other guy got taken over. I actually started speaking to him because his water was over the side, and I asked him if he wanted his water, and then he came into my lane because there was three people in the medium lane. So yeah, but I mean we timed it pretty well. It was like when he was going down one side, I was going up the other side, so it was like we were never in each other's way. But yeah, whereabouts was I going with this? I can't even remember. But yeah, so the fact that kind of like I could go the way that I wanted basically before he came in, and then when he came in, we started kind of like making sure that we weren't going to hit into each other. But I definitely noticed that doing the front crawl, that was it. Doing the front crawl was really, really difficult. So I noticed that kind of like I do backstroke quite a lot. Like, I mean, it's saying that I've done 25 meters butterfly, but that's shite. I've never done no butterfly. So I done like 150 meters of breaststroke, 325 meters of front crawl, but then backstroke I done like 825 meters. And yeah, it was difficult, really, really difficult. It was, but I enjoyed it. The fact that I can't go out, the fact that I can't go out, I can't go out running just now, then I'm glad that I found out about the swimming. Well, I mean, I didn't find out. I got told, why don't you go swimming? And I was like, why did I not think about that? So yeah, again, the lovely woman in my life telling me what I should be doing. So yeah, so I went and done the swimming. And now my ankle seems to be getting a little bit better, so hopefully I can be back running on Friday. But I think if they're still doing this free, this free swimming, then I think that I'll probably still go and do that in the morning, and then go for a run after that, or go for a run and then go swimming after that. But then, yeah, God knows if I'm going to be beating my time or anything, because yeah, I'll be absolutely knackered. I've noticed as well that kind of like I felt the cramp coming on a few times when I was doing breaststroke. It was like, oh no, I better not get cramp. There's nothing worse than getting cramp in the swimming pool. And I'm weird. Can I do? I get cramp in the back of my calf, my right calf. But certain people are different. You know, like you might get cramp in a different place, which I find really, really weird. It blows my mind a little bit. Right, I'm gonna drink my coffee, so I'm gonna move away from the microphone. I absolutely hate the fact that I make a coffee for doing the podcast and then I don't really drink it. It sits there, and then when I come back to it, it's cold coffee, and I'm not too keen on the cold coffee. Like these people who go and get those iced lattes and stuff like that, like on a hot day, it's just like no. I'm sorry if you're one of those people as well. I've got nothing against you at all. It's just that it is not my preference. So in my opinion, ice cold coffee is rank. But in your opinion, it could be completely different, and that is it. We are all entitled to our opinions. As much as some people might not agree with your opinion, but you are still entitled to your opinion. So we've got some more COVID talk going on to opinions. The COVID talk, in my opinion. Because yeah, I was speaking to my mate the other day, and he was saying about the English, the final at Wembley, where there was like, what was it, 60,000 people at Wembley for the Euros final, but we're still in a life-threatening pandemic, which in my eyes sets alarm bells ringing that. So how come 60,000 people can go and watch a football match, but the kids can't have like after school discos for their school leaving party? Like, yes, it's a very, very strange one, shall we say. And he made the observation that I was like, yeah, that's very, very true, actually. Why is that the case? And it was Prince William, who is, what is he, second or third to the throne? I think he's second, is he not, after his dad? The way that the Queen's going, I don't think that she'll ever die. She just seems to keep on going, does she? But yeah, Prince William, second or third, whatever, in line for the throne. And he can go and sit with 60,000 people at Wembley. So, like, if it was as deadly as we've all been led to hear or led to believe by the fear mongering on the news, then would you not be wrapping up Prince William and his son and his wife in bubble wrap, being like, yes, we understand that you're a football fan, but in the height of this pandemic that people are dying left, right and center, then yeah. Why is he allowed to do that? And then also is that I don't understand as well how the one of the Scottish players caught it, but only he needed to isolate. Now I remember seeing Matt Hancock just before he got found out and he had to leave his post. I remember seeing him on the news, and they asked him that. It was like, so how come the whole Scotland team isn't having to isolate? And he was a bumbling mess. He couldn't even answer the question. But if someone that I know that I've been in close contact with caught it, then I would need to isolate. So I don't understand how there's this one rule for us and there's one rule for the footballers or the Tory officials or and the rest of them. It just seems like something very fishy is going there, you know, like the whole Matt Hancock thing with the health, you know, like the health minister telling us that this is such a deadly disease and one mistake could affect the whole load of us, and he's not even listening to his own advice. So what does he know that we don't know that he can go and do that in this life-threatening pandemic that we're in? And then I went and checked, like I went and checked for, yeah, I went and checked on my. So I would highly recommend that you go to the bhf.org.uk and Health Matters. There's a massive website here. You see, if you type into Google, we'll go back. If you type into Google a COVID risk calculator, or even how likely are you going to die from COVID? And I think it's the first one that comes up. I'm no longer using Google. I use that DuckDuckGo.com, but I think it's exactly the same for Google. It will bring it up. So the COVID risk calculator and find out your personal coronavirus. So click on that. Now I went and done that last night, right? So I have got a 1 in 142,857 risk of dying from COVID. I think I've got more risk of dying from the vaccination than I do of actual COVID. So that's 0.0007% a chance that I've got of dying of COVID. But we all need to be vaccinated. And then someone argued with me and said that, oh yeah, but that's just for you, it's for the older generation and all that kind of stuff. But they've all been double vaccinated. So if we're worried about the older people, then why are they not just getting vaccinated? The people with the health issues and all that kind of stuff, like they can all be vaccinated so that if us younger people catch it, then they've like if we spread it on to them, then they're not going to die from it. I can completely understand that, completely understand that. But when my risk of dying from it is 0.0007%, then why am I chucking this thing in my body that I don't even know that the clinical trials aren't over until 2023? But it seems like, well, this is just my opinion, but it seems like they're gonna try and push the fact that you're gonna need a COVID passport to go traveling and all that kind of stuff. There was also, what was it? Like, I think when I'd done it, right, let's see if I can do it again because it tells you the, it was like 0.00258% chance that I've got of going into hospital with COVID. So they are pretty low odds. Now I could understand if you've got health conditions or you know like you've got something that you think that it might be. I just do not understand why we all need to be vaccinated when I've got more chance of something severely happening, seriously happening to me, taking the jab. Because you've seen people getting blood clots, and like I watched some guy on TikTok who got the first injection and then he got like a few blood clots. And it's also the fact as well that the Pfizer and the Bill Gates and Melinda Gates can like. Like they've made even more money through vaccinations and stuff like that, so no wonder they're trying to push it out that everybody needs to be vaccinated. I don't know. I like, as I said, these are totally my just my opinions on the matter, but I just don't trust it. I just don't trust the fear mongering in this country. I do not trust the fact that I have a 0.00007% chance of dying from this virus. So why would I be sticking an injection? I mean, it's exactly like the flu vaccine. I would never get the flu vaccine either because I'm healthy, and if I catch the flu, then oh well, I'll just get over it. But I do not understand. Like, I mean, I can completely understand if people feel like, I mean, that is your opinion. You can go and get the jab. I'm not trying to tell you not to go and get the jab. You need to do what you feel comfortable with. But please go and do your research first. And like, go and get the jab after you've done your research. If you have underlying health issues, then you can quite happily go and get the jab if it makes you feel that you'd be safer. But for me, I think I would have more risk of dying from the vaccine than I do of actual COVID. But yeah, like, there just seems something really, really fishy about it. Really fishy. And the fact that they've had to lie about the deaths, where you can have COVID and then a month after you've had COVID, you could die of a heart attack and it gets put down as a COVID death. Like, why? If this is so deadly and there's people dying all over the place of COVID, then you wouldn't need to lie. You wouldn't need to make the numbers bigger by a month later after you've recovered from COVID and you die of something completely unrelated. Then yeah, like, I don't know. My opinion does get me into trouble sometimes. You might be screaming at your radios or your phones right now, telling me that I'm wrong, but this is my opinion, and I'm sticking with it. If I'm proven wrong, as I've already shown, I will quite happily admit that I am wrong, even though it's a bitter pill to swallow. But I will come out and say that I am wrong, as much as it hurts me to know that I've said something that is wrong. But yeah, and I think that there's quite a lot of people who agree with me, because, and that's it, like, whether you're watching social media or whether you're searching on the internet, there is always going to be stuff that props up both arguments. There is always going to be something that props up both arguments. And that's it, like, I know people who are seeing everything great and how it's working, and then the stuff that I see, because that's the type of things that I like, it's all about don't go and get vaccinated, look what's happening. Well, I mean, go and read that yellow card, the yellow card thing. And I mean, when this all first started happening, it was my mate's wife. She works for the NHS, and she said that she spoke to an older gentleman, and he even said, he was speaking about the whole COVID thing, and even he said, he was like, yeah, but you young ones don't need to worry about this. It's us older ones, us hangers on, or what was it, hanger oners, or something like that you call themselves, that need to worry about it. And then that was funny, like, halfway like through the pandemic, it was the older generation that weren't giving a fuck. They were out with, like, out and about, still doing their day-to-day business. And it was all the younger ones and all that kind of stuff, like, freaking out. But as I said before, I think that my opinion is completely like this because I've worked through the whole pandemic. I've had to go into supermarkets, and the person that I was seeing at the time, she was working in a supermarket, or her company was in the supermarket, and so she was coming into contact with people every day. Just like when I needed to go to the toilet, I had to go to the toilet in the supermarkets. Like, we were out the whole entire time. And there's still only a selective few people that I know who've got COVID and they lost their taste. Just like a bad cold. But the fear. But yeah, I just don't understand that if we're looking to protect the old and vulnerable, then they have all been double vaccinated. So why do I need to be double vaccinated when I don't want the jab? It isn't going to affect me the same way that it is going to affect someone with health issues, or like I would much rather take my chance rather than put something in my body. But then I shouldn't be forced into having to take this jab. And the way that you've been seeing the government, like where they've been saying that the people who haven't been vaccinated, if they come to the hospital, then they shouldn't get treatment like the people who have had like the double vaccination. Like it's starting to become like Nazi Germany. We should all have a choice in this. And if you don't want to take it, then that's completely up to you. And if you do want to take it, then that's completely up to you as well. There shouldn't be this divide between us all. We're all human beings at the end of the day. And there is just a great divide of people arguing about it, and I don't understand why. We should all just learn to live in harmony and peace and just get on with each other, whether you want to be vaccinated or not. The world needs more love in it, where we all just care for each other. Instead of all this hate and all that kind of stuff, like the hate that you're seeing, well, actually, I've seen quite a lot of English fans on TikTok coming up, and they just haven't been agreeing with what's been said. And this is totally the reason, you know, like I saw quite a few TikToks before the football match even got kicked off, and it was like, what were they saying? Like, if you go out of the tournament, and this was like Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales. If you go out of the tournament, like some English man asking, so if you go out of the tournament, why do you not support England? And it is the small minority of your fans who think that it's perfectly acceptable to do what they've done. That is why we do not support you. And also the fact as well that you're seeing the English fans that you've got to a final and you're singing about Scotland. The one team that you couldn't beat, like Italy and us, were the one team that you couldn't beat in the whole entire final. Like, we are total living rent-free in your heads. Rent-free. And you couldn't even beat us. We're crap. We get beat by teams that you don't even know is a proper country until they beat Scotland. And England, with the team that they've got, they couldn't beat us. And we nearly beat you. We well had that game. Like, you guys didn't have much chances. Like, the John Stones hitting it off the post. But, like, from what I remember seeing it, like, we were all over you. It's well funny. It's well funny that Scotland getting a draw against England down at Wembley. That is basically our final. We won that final by drawing with you because you thought it was going to be a walk in the park. We understand how poor we are. But we're great people. And we love and respect other cultures. Well, I hope that we do. There's gonna be the odd few. But I saw another TikTok actually, and it was a Spanish woman talking, and she was saying about the football, and she said that kind of like, oh, like the Scots when they came down, they tidied up. And they looked after the place and all that kind of stuff. And she was like, oh, I want to move to Scotland. And then I think a whole bunch of Scottish people started commenting on our page, and they were like, "I just come up, like come and stay, you know, like the kettle's on and everything, like we'll take you with open arms, basically." And I think she was overwhelmed at the love that she got, because I think she was saying that in London, when she talks outside, when she talks in Spanish, that she gets dodgy looks and stuff. And you, why are we so racist to other people who are coming over to our country? But then we are the only people who get called expats when we move into someone else's country, and then we don't even learn their language. Like, I know people who stay over in Portugal and people who've gone over to Spain and stuff like that, and they still don't know how to speak the language. It's like you are living over in their country and you are still expecting them to talk English to you. We are a disgrace. And then the fact that we think that people coming over here for a better life, like we had a massive influx of Polish people coming in. And the way that I look at it is if you're making a better life here, then I would be doing exactly the same. Exactly the same. So why do we frown upon these people coming into our country because they want a better life? And we go mental about it. I mean, it's horrible. It really is horrible. Again, if you can be anything, just be kind. Just be kind. Because being kind will raises your vibration, does it? You know, like we spoke about that yesterday. We all want to raise our vibrations and just be happy and spread love to the world instead of spreading hate. And it's a shame because that's why football gets such a bad name when things like that happen and the minority set it off. But I completely agree with a few people from TikTok, you know, like we need to find out who these people are and we need to ban them from life. Ban them for life from football matches because it's got no place whatsoever. And that Gary Neville interview as well, like I think someone hit on the head that if you're saying, you know, like, well done, Gary Neville, for saying what you said and stuff like that. There's been people out there who've been saying it for years, years. And the fact that Gary Neville's now said it, a lot of people are now like, well, yeah, we do need to do that. But I mean, it's an absolute disgrace that Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister, when he was working for the newspapers, said that, what was it, the people in the, oh my God, what is it called? People in the burqas, they look like a post box. And you're like, how are you getting away with saying that? We have got one of the biggest racists as our prime minister, and then he's out there telling the people who can like the minorities of English fans who were doing what they were doing, racially abusing kids. Because that kid, he's 19 years old, 19 years old, and he has totally done more in his life than the fat arseholes who were slagging him off, you know, like in their fucking beer bellies with a can of Stella, and their wife who's probably got like two black eyes at home because he fucking, like, a keyboard warrior, basically. Again, this is just my opinion. But we've all seen it. We have all seen those typical English fans, the one who just resort to violence, who are racist as fuck, who probably do batter their wives because they would never have the guts to do it to a man because they would get battered themselves. You know the type of people. We've all met them. And it's a disgrace. It is honestly, honestly, honestly a disgrace. And then people who watch rugby, they look down upon us because they're like, well, we can go and sit in the same, like, in the same sections as other fans. And there is no violence whatsoever. And I think I realized that with football. That's the reason why I stopped watching it so much. Like, I was a die-hard Liverpool fan. I've got a Liverpool tattoo on my leg. Die hard Liverpool fan, would never miss a match and everything. Like, I would get unhappy if we lost the match and everything. And then going through my spiritual awakening, and I realized that football is just another way for us all to hate each other. It is just put there for us all to hate each other. And I don't want to do that with my life anymore. I do not want to hate people because they support a different team than me, or hate someone because they speak a different language to me. Not that I ever did hate anybody who spoke a different language to me, but exactly as I said, there needs to be more love in the world. More love. We need to start working together than working against each other. These people with different cultures from us have got some amazing things to tell you. Listen. It's absolutely fascinating. And I mean, our food culture, you know, that's what I like about going away. When I went away to Latvia, you know, because they've been invaded a few times by the Russians and the Germans and all that kind of stuff, then they've got different foods because the Germans have taken in their food and the Russians have taken in their food. And it's interesting, whereas our food's bland. But it was the Indians who came in. And now look at us. Now we all eat curry. Like our dish was fish and chips. But then when the Indians came over, then we changed. So let these people in. Let them bring their culture over. Let them. Because we do exactly the same when we go over there as expats. And we don't even speak their language. At least these people come over and they have got the dignity to learn our language. They do not expect us to be able to speak to them in Polish, Russian, French, German, Spanish, Dutch, wherever they're from. Just be more compassionate. You have no idea what they've went through. No idea. We don't know what anybody's going through. So why do you think that you have got the right to put people down? Because you don't have the right to put people down. Just be happy and just be nice, please. Other people are gonna have different opinions than you. That's absolutely fine. It is absolutely fine. We just need to find the common ground. If you don't agree with everything that they say, then it doesn't mean that they're wrong and that you're right. It's just that they've got a different sort of opinion of you. And if we all had the same opinion, then it would be boring. We wouldn't have anything to talk about. We wouldn't have anything to debate. But we just need to learn that a difference of opinion doesn't mean that those people are stupid or that they're wrong. It's just that they don't believe the same thing that you believe in. But yeah, let's have a look at these two steps, the first steps to change your life. So he says, forgive yourself, wipe the slate clean. You've been lying to yourself, cheating on yourself, eating the wrong foods, being lazy, letting yourself down for years, and it's been recorded. So you just need to apologize to yourself. He says that everyone deserves a second chance, even you. So wipe that slate clean and go and do what you want to go and do. Stop lying to yourself, though. Stop eating the wrong foods. And believe me, I know how tough it is. This is coming from a guy who used to be 23 stone, where I didn't drink any water. I just drank fizzy juice or diluting juice with tons and tons of diluting juice in it. I know how difficult it is. I know how hard it is to give up those foods. But then the amazing thing that happened was that when I gave up those foods, then I realized how much better my body felt. So it's difficult. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it and say that it's not difficult because it is really difficult. But you can do it. Honestly, just start believing in yourself. I believe in you. The world believes in you. You just need to start believing in yourself. And once you start believing in yourself, then watch that switch. You will become unstoppable. And also remember that we create our reality with the thoughts that we think. So if you're constantly putting yourself like, oh no, I wouldn't be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to buy that house. I'm never going to be able to do this. I'm never going to be able to do that. Then guess what? You're never going to be able to do the things. You're never going to be able to do it because your mind will find the reasons why you can't do those things. You need to be looking at it and being like, yes, I can do this and I can do that. And then start with the hard work. But then once you start putting in the hard work, then it then becomes habit and routine. And then you'll be smashing your goals left, right, and center. That's it. Like I managed to lose, what was it, like 6, 7 stone in a year and a few months. Now, I always thought that I was gonna need to that I was gonna be that I was gonna need to go for years and years and years before I got down to a kind of weight that I was happy with. And the fact that I've got there so quickly has been absolutely fascinating. And that was it. Like, I never thought in a million years that I would be the type of person that I am today. But you can do it too, I swear, I promise you can do it too. Just change that mindset, please. Just completely and utterly change that mindset. As I keep on saying to my little boy, there is no such word as can't. You can do it. And you will do it if you start putting your mind to it. I'm not saying it's not going to be hard. It's going to be damn hard. But you can totally do it if you start putting your mind to it. So let's all start putting our mind to it and start achieving the things that we want to achieve in life. Right, I'm gonna drink some more of my coffee, so I'm gonna move away the microphone. Sorry about that. It actually gave me a chance to stop it and then restart it again, cause you can do that, and it also only gives you 60 seconds as well. So, and also my coffee's bloody cold as well, which is, as we've said, well, as I've said, in my opinion, it is horrible. Right, so step two, you have to commit. You are going to do what you say you are going to do from this point forward. You are the one who gets to decide what you are going to do, so just don't agree to it. If you think that you're not going to be able to do it, then just don't agree to it. You are the one inside of your head that agrees to these things, and then you're not gonna accomplish it, and you know that you're not gonna accomplish it. So let's start off small. You have to commit to it and do everything you say that you're going to do. It's a choice. You need to be teaching yourself. You aren't someone who breaks promises to yourself anymore. And I mean, I know for a fact that I used to do that as well. Like I was like, oh yeah, I'll get up in the morning and I'll go for a run and I'll do this and I'll do that and yeah, I couldn't do it. I was lying to myself. But now I know that when I say that I'm gonna do something, I am gonna do it. There is no doubt that I'm gonna go and do it. I will push myself to get there. Because as I said earlier on, the only person that you should be competing with is the person that you were yesterday. Just make sure that you are better than that person that you were yesterday. And it can even be small things. Like I was one of these people that didn't used to make my bed or didn't used to open up the curtains or kind of like that kind of stuff. So you can just start implementing that into your life. I'm going to get up, make my bed, and open up the curtains. That is my first goal when I get up. And I smash it every day now. But then that started to teach my brain that I am someone who says, who does the things that I say that I'm going to do. Because I've got up every day and I've made my bed and opened up my curtains. And you can do it too. Start with that one. It's very, very simple. I mean, I understand if it's hard if you wake up before your wife or girlfriend, then you don't get the chance to get up and make the bed and draw the curtains because they're still sleeping. Or your husband, even, you might get up before your husband or boyfriend and they're still snoring away at the side. So I understand that this is probably a difficult for some people, but if you stay by yourself, then that's what you need to start doing. Just start small. And then what else can you do? It's like, I don't know, just little things. You'll find out yourself, you know yourself, what you can achieve. And when you achieve those goals, like, praise yourself for achieving those goals. Because there's no, you need to be your biggest hype man. There is no knight in shining armor who is going to come and break down your door and give you the biggest cheer and all that kind of stuff for you achieving your goals. You are the person. So start loving yourself. Start giving yourself the praise that you deserve because nobody else is going to do it for you. I've also got to say that positive affirmations is absolutely brilliant. Start telling yourself that you're loved, that you're happy, that you can do anything that you want to achieve in your life. I used to go to bed and listen to positive affirmations, and it was quite funny because when you woke up, it would be like, "You are loved, you are beautiful, and you feel really great about yourself." I mean, like waking up at like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning when, or, 'cause I wake up through the night and roll back over and go to sleep. But yeah, when I woke up, you would hear like, "You are loved, you are beautiful." You're like, "Yes, yes, I am." And that's it. I never used to think these things about myself, but the fact that you realize that you need to love yourself before someone else can love you. Because how can you expect someone else to love you if you do not love yourself? How are you going to expect them to love all of your flaws when you don't love all of your flaws? Are there certain aspects of you that you don't like or that you don't love about yourself? And then you're asking someone else to unconditionally love you completely as the person that you are, but you don't find yourself attractive, or you don't find yourself that you don't like these bits about yourself and you don't like those bits, then how are you expecting someone else to love all of those bits of you as well? It definitely shows. If you love yourself, then you can definitely see someone who thinks well about themselves. And you can definitely tell the people who have got their no self-confidence and the way that they hold themselves. And I mean, that's it. I'm not perfect. I've still got rolls of flab and loose skin and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not perfect, but I love that about myself. That shows me how hard I've worked with the situation that I've been dealt with. And I have worked damn hard. I've been out there basically every day running and sweating. And then when I was staying out at my mum's, I was playing badminton and swimming, and I want to get a weight bench as well. I think I need to help my mate out with his shed, and he said that he was going to give me a weight bench and some weights, so that would be absolutely perfect. I definitely want to start getting my upper body into some sort of shape and Like my legs are all right, but yeah, my upper body could do with. Ah, oh, damn it! I thought I was gonna be able to not yawn. It's only bloody 12:15 on Wednesday, the 14th. Oh, Judgment Day tomorrow, people! Judgment Day. See if I get. Well, I already know that I'm getting paid off. Like, there is no doubt about that. So, and then I'll need to wait. I'll just need to wait. So yeah, sorry, I was reading a text message there. Sounds like some quite sad news that the cat that I used to own has had to be put down, which is some sad news. That isn't so good. God, what was I talking about? God, that's totally thrown me right off guard. Yeah, Judgment Day. That's right, Judgment Day tomorrow. So I think that I will probably wait until I get my last payment from the company before I start speaking my mouth off about the stuff that has been going on. Make sure I've got all my money first before I start spouting my mouth. But yes, that should be quite an interesting podcast. On the probably on the 1st of August. So we've only got 2 weeks really, people. 2 weeks of finding out, but yeah, like I can definitely see me being paid off. The fact that I haven't been at work since, well, for a month basically, or just under a month. If I wasn't being paid off, then I think I would be back to work by now. But I'm not back at work right now, so it looks as though I'm going to be getting paid off. But yeah, I will. We will see what's happening there. That should be quite funny. Talking about that episode, right? I've got one more thing that I want to talk about. One more thing. Now, I heard this comedian talk about this. Now, I've also got the article. God's sake, laptop. Sorry, my laptop switched off. Oh, it's went into rest mode. So, did you know? Did you know in the later parts of 1932 that the Australian army went to war with the emus? Now, if you don't know what emus are, they are a flightless bird native to Australia. And in 1932, they needed to address public concern over the number of emus said to be running amok in the Campanian district of Western Australia. So they literally came up with like tanks and machine guns and fought the emus. Now, the most funny thing about this is that they lost. What does it say? Like, this is in. So it's the Emu War, also known as the Great Emu War, was a nuisance wildlife management military operation undertaken in Australia over the later parts of 1932. So, and it says the unsuccessful attempts to curb the population of emus, a large flightless bird indigenous to Australia, employed soldiers armed with Lewis guns, leading the media to adopt the name Emu War when referring to the incident. While a number of the birds were killed, the emu population persisted and continued to cause crop destruction. And then I also think that they tried to do it again. And they failed again. And then that's what the guy's saying. He's, like, we're meant to be like the companion, like if we're going into war with someone else and stuff like that, it's like, oh yeah, you need some hunt. There's no emus gonna be there, is there? Like, this is So you can go and check this out, like the background. Following World War One, large numbers of discharged veterans who served in the war were given land by the Australian government to take up farming within Western Australia, often in agricultural marginal areas. With the onset of the Great Depression in 1929, these farmers were encouraged to increase their wheat crops, with the government promising and failing to deliver assistance in the form of subsidies. In spite of the recommendations and the promised subsidies, wheat prices continued to fall, and by October 1932, matters were becoming intense, with the farmers preparing to harvest the season crops while simultaneously threatening to refuse to deliver the wheat. The difficulties facing farmers were increased by the arrival of as many as 20,000 emus. Emus regularly migrate after their breeding season, heading to the coast from the inland regions. With the cleared land and additional water supplies being made available for livestock by the Western Australian farmers, the emus found that the cultivated lands were good habitat and they began to foray into farm territory. In particular, the marginal farming land around Chandler and Walgulan, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, the emus consumed and spoiled the crops, as well as leaving large gaps in fences where rabbits could enter and cause further problems. Farmers relayed their concerns about the birds ravaging their crops and a deputation of ex-soldiers were sent to meet with the Minister of Defence, Sir George Pearse. Having served in World War One, the soldier settlers were well aware of the effectiveness of machine guns as they requested their deployment. The minister readily agreed, although with conditions attached. The guns were to be used by military personnel. Troop transport was to be financed by the Western Australian government, and the farmers would provide food, accommodation, and payment for the ammunition. Pearce also supported the deployment on the grounds that the birds would make good target practice. While it has also been argued that some in the government may have viewed the operation as a way of being seen to help the Western Australian farmers to stave off the secession movement that was brewing. Towards that end, cinematographer from Fox Movietown was enlisted. So military involvement was to begin in October 1932. The war was conducted under the commands of Major GPW Meredith of the 7th Heavy Battery of the Royal Australian Artillery, with Meredith commanding soldiers Sergeants S. McMurray and Gunner J. O. Holloran. Armed with 2 Lewis guns and 10,000 rounds of ammunition, the operation was delayed, however, by a period of rainfall that caused the emus to scatter over a wider area. The rain ceased by the 2nd of November 1932, whereupon the troops were deployed with orders to assist the farmers and, according to a newspaper account, to collect 10 emu skins so that their feathers could be used to make hats for light horsemen. So the first attempt on the 2nd of November, the men travelled to Campin, or what it might be, like I might be pronouncing that completely wrong, where some 50 emus were sighted. As the birds were out of range of the guns, the local settlers attempted to herd the emus into an ambush, but the birds split into small groups and ran so that they were difficult to target. Nevertheless, while the first fusillade from the machine guns was ineffective due to the range, a second round of gunfire was able to kill a number of birds. Later the same day, a small flock was encountered and perhaps a dozen birds were killed. The next significant event was on the 4th of November. Meredith had established an ambush near a local dam, and more than 1,000 emus were spotted heading towards their position. This time, the gunner waited until the birds were in close proximity before opening fire. The gun jammed only after 12 birds were killed and remained scattered before any more could be shot. No more birds were sighted that day. In the days that followed, Meredith chose to move further south, where the birds were reported to be fairly tame, but there was only limited success in spite of his efforts. By the fourth day of the campaign, Army Observer notes that each pack seemed to have its own leader now. a big black plump bird which stands fully 6 feet high and keeps watching while his mates carry out the work of destruction and warns them of our approach. At one stage, Meredith even went as far as to mount one of his guns on a truck and move that provided to be effective, as the truck was unable to gain on the birds. As the truck was unable to gain on the birds, and the ride was so rough that the gunner was unable to fire any shots. By the 8th of November, 6 days after their first engagement, 2,500 rounds of ammunition had been fired. The number of birds killed is uncertain. One account estimates that it was 50 birds, but other accounts range from 200 to 500, the latter figure being provided by the settlers. Meredith's official report noted that his men had suffered no casualties. Summarizing the cull, ornithologist Dominic Cervantes commented, "The machine gun dreams of point-blank fire into serried massive emus were soon dissipated. The emu commanded had evidently ordered guerrilla tactics, and its unwieldy army soon split up into innumerable small units that made use of the military equipment uneconomic. A crestfallen field force therefore withdrew from the combat after about a month." So, on the 8th of November, members in the Australian House of Representatives discovered the operation, following the negative coverage of the event in the local media that included claims that only a few emus had died. Pearce withdrew the military personnel and the guns on the 8th of November. After the withdrawal, Major Meredith compared the emus to Zulus and commented on the striking maneuverability of the emus, even while badly wounded. "If we had had military diversion with the bullets carrying ca capacity of these birds, it would face any army in the world. They can face machine guns with the invulnerability of tanks. They are like Zulus, who even dum-dum bullets could not stop." And then it says that despite, so there was another second attempt and they failed miserably there. I'm not going to read it again, but the aftermath, despite the problems encountering with the cull, the farmers of the region once again requested military assistance in 1934, 1943, and 1948, only to be turned down by the government. Instead, the bounty system that had been insinuated in 1923 was continued, and this provided to be effective. 57,034 bounties were claimed over a 6 month period in 1934. By December 1932, word of the emu war had spread, reaching the United Kingdom. Some conservatives there protested the cull as extermination of the rare emu. Dominic Cervantes and Hubert Whittle, the eminent Australian ornithologist, described the war as an attempt at the mass destruction of the birds. Throughout 1930 and onwards, exclusive barrier fencing became a popular means of keeping emus out of agriculture areas, in addition to another vermin such as dingoes and rabbits. In November 1950, Hugh Leslie raised the issue of emus in federal parliament and urged Army Minister Josiah Francis to release a quantity of 303 ammunition from the army for the use of farmers. The ministry approved the release of 500,000 rounds of ammunition. In recent years, reference to the emu war has been a popular internet meme. In 2019, a musical adaptation of the story was workshopped in Melbourne by playwriter Simeon. Yeah, I'm not going to try and pronounce his last name. And composer James Court, a movie retelling of the events written by John Cleese, Monty Frankley, and Rob Schneider is slated for release, or is slated, yeah, for release in 2020. So now you know, like I heard this from the Australian comedian, and. And yeah, the fact that they went to war with emus and lost, it's absolutely brilliant. But yeah, I've rambled on quite sufficiently today. But yeah, that's absolutely hilarious. I had a good chuckle when I heard it, so hopefully you guys have had a good chuckle as well. You guys and girls have had a good chuckle. This is what the EAEM podcast is all about, huh? Some good laughs. Good laughs. Birds freak me out. Birds freak me out like that. They're just like, they're fucking dinosaurs, basically. They look like dinosaurs. I saw another woman on TikTok who had, I think she might have had emus or something like that. And yeah, like the thing was trying to come in and attack her, and it looked like a fucking big dinosaur coming in and trying to attack her. They freak me out. But anyway, people, remember, love big, be happy, appreciate the small things, be thankful for what you already have, and stop focusing on what you don't have. Remember, the aim of the game is to find happiness from within. I hope that you have enjoyed today's opinion, today's opinion, today's episode. It was just a way to say, remember that everything that I've said on this is my opinion on the whole COVID thing and all that kind of stuff. The emu war, that's all. I've just read that from Wikipedia, so go and have a look. But yeah, thanks for tuning in, and I will speak to you soon. Ciao.